Joining us on the show today is a very special guest. It's the one, the only, Devontae DeBussy. How are you doing, man?
I'm great. DeBose, by the way.
DeBose? Oh.
Yeah, it's all good. We get that from time to time. But I'm, feeling great. Blessed to have my health. And I want to thank you for having me.
No problem. So let me ask, how long did it take for everyone on the team to get your name right? Or did everyone get it right automatically?
It just depends. It really depends. You get Dubois, you get DeBussy sometimes, but then a lot of times, I usually come across as D to a lot of people, you know what I'm saying? Whether they, even people who don't know me, you know, they kind of, it's easier to say D, because I have three initials, my first name, middle name, and my last name starts with a D, so double D, triple D, or D. Oh, some people don't even try to do the, don't even go for it, the last name. unless my high school friends, unless you go back to high school, I get the bulls, just because, football, when you call by last name and stuff. But
That's true. That's very true.
So.
I don't know if that's like a black family thing, but even in my family, like my name is Elliot, and my family would still be like, like, yo, y'all too lazy to say the full name?
Right. No, it's definitely a cultural thing, yeah.
Well, I want to ask you, like, straight off the bat, like, how did you get started in soccer? Of course, you're from Oakland, California, and everything like that. Like, how did you get started in soccer, and, like, who were some of your role models growing up?
Good question. Obviously, coming from a melting pot of diversity and just, like, a culturally rich environment like Oakland, there's definitely a lot of different factors and, mentors and influences that led to soccer. I think, obviously, my mother... my father had moved back to the East Coast, when I was like 2 or 3. He was an American football player for the Niners. He was there with a few of their glory years. And the Chubb took a turn, and, for various reasons, obviously, when it came to injuries and, substances and whatnot. So my mother, my mother in my village, my great-grandmothers and everybody on my West Coast, she kind of elected to, to be here and keep me here while I had my family on the East Coast. And I think me growing up, knowing that my father was a great athlete, that's all I kind of knew, despite, the other negative factors that come along with that. So football was definitely, having the Raiders there and the Niners. I grew up in a culture where football was, the culture. It's like that people are familiar with the Raider Nation. It's kind of like just that tenacious, and driven community drive. So I think that's what kept me having passion for American football. But then that led to me, my mother, she knew I wanted to play football, but she put me in soccer. And I ended up really gaining a lot of different, it embraced me in a lot of different ways. Cause I enjoyed just the connection soccer had, which I wasn't aware of, that I'd love to compete, obviously. I'm a competitor. I think that's what the culture ultimately in Oakland has to offer. So, and sports is something I love to do. And soccer was a distraction almost for my mother. She was like, all right, I'm throwing you in soccer at age 7. And then I never stopped playing after that. I have so many mentors, influences, like a lot of international influences, the families I met along the way who took me in, I kind of rolled along with. And my mother and my grandparents, they were kind of just always watching me on my game, but it was with family, international family, some of my best friends today. His mother's back and his father is from England, and I was with them a lot of the times, and been a Latino and Asian family who took me in, and I was part of, he was a coach. And then my other coach was Nepalese, and his wife was white. So, I grew up, once I started that at 7, in addition, it's just standard, white family in Oakland. I was in those houses and grew up in those families, and I think it just embraced me a different way, and I just never stopped playing, And I still play football growing up, but that's how I kind of met soccer and started to develop a love for it.
Oh, wow. So there's an alternate universe where you can really be, a starting safety or a cornerback right now.
Oh, man. Probably, safety is the way I defense. Just because I look at DBs, it's funny, I was on the radio show in Phoenix, and I kind of, I got to meet people like Larry Fitzgerald, and his son plays actually soccer, and we got to really relate, and he's actually an American. It's one that is kind of underrated still in the African-American community. However, I think it's now being exposed, and a lot of benefits, you're starting to see it on the rise, you know, especially in the urban communities, you know, which you don't really necessarily see too much, you know, so, yeah.
Yeah, I could definitely relate to that. I mean, my mom started me off at soccer, and then, you know, of course, like, as I tell everyone, being in the South, and you're like, you know, oh, yeah, you 6 foot? Oh, and you got a big? Yeah. Oh, come on, play offensive line for me. Like, it was kind of like how that thing happened. Yeah. Definitely, I definitely can relate to your story and everything. So, I got to ask this, because, you know, obviously when you signed for the Kickers this past offseason and whatnot, and I saw, like, Virginia Tech, and I'm thinking, like, oh, he's probably from, you know, the East Coast and everything. And I was like, no, he's from Oakland. I'm like, yo, how? I got to know, how did you end up at Virginia Tech? And how was your playing experience there?
Yeah, I think so. A couple of different answers. I like one of them. The answer is ever since the five, like I told you, my dad had moved back. You know, that East Coast, that Southern, those families. And when people say like Southern hospitality, I think I, being a West Coast kid and a young West Coast kid, I think the old days you get that traditional family love. But when you ever since 5 years old and being on the East Coast in the South, dude. Between nature alone, but then just the how deep and how the connection, the family, something I think stuck to me about that. And every, I look forward to coming to the East Coast, you know, summers, winters, you name it. So ultimately, I mean, when I got that chance to play the ACC, now mind you, obviously, I think for me, that was like the SEC of football, that's what I usually say. So in the soccer correlation, right, that's the SEC of football. And it was the best conference to play in. It was the only time I got recruited when I went on a showcase and I was playing academy ball. And as soon as I flew over to Virginia Tech, I always pretty much verbally had committed to a school on the West Coast. I flew over to the Virginia Tech campus. I had my relatives I stayed with, so I was like, ooh, I love the feeling of family again, of just like, you know, we rolling deep and that support. And it, everything was on the plate, to be honest. I walked on campus. Now, the other answer is, you know, dude, I still love football. And for me to be in a place that, you know, that campus is football, you know, this football driven.
Oh, yes.
Community driven and pride driven. So
yes.
I wanted to be a part of that spirit and that environment. I think that's why being a Hokie, man, and it speaks volumes to, like, this community, like the Hokies offer, but also, like, again, and the air and the embracement is different when it comes to culture and family here on, like, the East and the Southern area, you know what I'm saying? So I think I made my decision based off of all those factors between soccer alone and just, like, clearly, like, you know, as a kid, I always needed some type of form of love and embracement, man. And it was an easy decision. And the rest was history. And I love, but now going to the soccer experience itself, we were one of those ACC teams that ended up struggling a lot, man. Obviously, with guys like Patrick Yarko before I came here, and then Virginia Tech was on a rebuild, and I was at the beginning of that rebuild. And so, yeah, I think I was exposed to a lot of the physical talent, but also our team was a team that at the time, under Mike Brizendine, was trying to find ourselves. And in the ACC, that's tough to do because we're playing against Duke, North Carolina, Maryland, Wake Forest, UVA, you know, Boston College, like top 10. Usually those top 10 teams are always in top five, you know what I'm saying? So so we were just struggling, lost, tied. But by the time my senior year, we found ourselves just in a better fight a lot of times. And I think I learned just so much adversity from losing but then being able to get back up and fighting. And so I would say, honestly, I wanted to win. I would have loved to learn to win, but I learned much more. And the social environment for me, what I learned through my team, but through that campus, I really met a lot of individuals and was a part of a lot of different, you know, friendships that, you know, that I still have today. So, and I wouldn't trade none of that for the world. So I didn't ever make it to the NCAA tournament. We did have one run in my senior year in the ACC tournament, we had some couple. We beat North Carolina number one. We had a lot of great moments, man. And for me, that was just like the epitome of like what it feels like to compete, you know, to lose, get back up, you know, and go out there and play another top five opponent. So it was definitely a roller coaster, but it's something that I encourage people to go out and challenge themselves. And I think that's what ACC had to offer to me, man. Despite us not being that number one team ACC, it was challenging. So I think that's the best way to kind of answer it. And it was challenging, but it was well worth it, you know.
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, obviously, when you think Virginia Tech, you think football and everything like that. And
right,
oblivious right. to me, like, I mean, being born and raised in Virginia, I never knew Virginia Tech had a soccer program because when you hear, like, once again, when you hear Virginia Tech, you only hear football. So,
yeah.
Also, we had Scott on our show earlier, and I asked him, okay. So I'm going to ask you as well. You know, he went to UVA, you know, that school up there. I didn't go to UVA. I went to Virginia State University, so I got some beef with UVA still on our colors and stuff. But, you know, I asked him, like, is there any rivalry between you two? You know, him being for UVA, you going to Tech. Was there any playful rivalry? Because I know UVA just beat Tech for the first time in, like, 50 years.
Yeah, right. And since I was there, like, besides my freshman year, like, we lost in double overtime. Every time we played it, we tied it. So it's funny because Scott Thompson's in my small group. We just obviously began training under the CDC guidelines and stuff. Mm-hmm. And shout out Scott Thompson. And we recently were just like, we're almost connecting those dots that you referred to in UVA. Like, I recently, because apparently Scott is 2 years younger than me.
Oh, wow.
And so, we recently were just talking about, I think literally the last practice yesterday. And we were trying to understand where we were at that given time. Because, man, there's so many cats on UVA that is just, you know, went off to do a lot of things. And Scott, it's funny because Scott reminds me of a lot of UVA players, like in terms of, like, their constant, you know, they're just relentless people. Obviously, they're always going to be skilled, you know what I'm saying? And so it makes a lot of sense. So in my mind, just because of UVA, Cavaliers versus Tech, I'm all like, naturally, just because of we're rivals, I'm like, all right, what's up, Scott? We like to throw jokes at each other. But, you know, Scott is one of the most charismatic kind of people that he would never really tell you until we get over, unless he, like, you know, gives you a little something. Then you know that that's that Cavalier, you know. So to be honest, you would never know that we would have that rivalry until, but you'll see it when things become, like, a little bit more, you know, intense. And that's when you see that Cavalier come, that ACC spirit and that Virginia Tech spirit. And I love it because we train really well together. Like, his training has been great because when you come from programs like that, like when we train, like the other day, like me and Scott want more. Like, we push each other very, very hard. I see how that program has led to his mentality and how Virginia Tech has led to mine, because you're in battle every week, you know? And it's definitely, I can see it now just because we're in a close, confined space, and I get to see that and interact with Scott. And I think it works well for us. And obviously, where our team chemistry and culture is with Aaron, what you do, those are the type of guys you bring to the team. And it's like, man, it's a huge growing opportunity. Mm-hmm. So I'm loving it, man, let alone with Scott. So, yeah, shout out Scott.
So, I mean, you brought up, so I want to ask, like, you know, under CDC guidelines, you know, only 10 people could be in a group and whatnot. How is that working for you, definitely being part of a new team? And, you know, how is it? Because I've seen you guys do workouts over Zoom and whatnot. I think, like, a Karis Fitzgerald do, like, yoga sessions for you guys. So how is that working where you can't really work with the whole team, you know, obviously being with what's going on? But how are you adjusting? How is the team adjusting to it? You know, things like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost the same as that everybody else has to adjust to, you know, their job at first, and then the skill set within their job. You know, it arises new challenges for the staff. You know, the front office, the staff, Rob, our owner. And I think as players, it's more so challenges to make sure that we are, one, staying true to those values that make up the that make up our community in Richmond, you know what I'm saying? And then, obviously, you know, your commitment, you know? So I think if anything has to change, because we're all at least professional athletes, right? We're here, but I think we're most challenged to how committed are we, you know, to, despite, you know, the circumstances, like, we have to really adjust with our, like, our mental fortitude. And I think that's what the underlying, what's underneath commitment is our mental fortitude. And it hasn't been easy, like, just with the staff, it hasn't been easy. Like, our coach there, Hamika, has to be out there for several hours just so that we can meet the CDC requirements of social distancing, but they still can implement, you know, make sure that we're getting or reaching that, those capacities which we need to fulfill to maintain a certain level of fitness. So it, obviously, there's so many challenges to make sure that we're maintaining some level of fitness, but I think within us as players, it's like, how committed, you know, or consistent are we going to be? And I think that's been the hardest thing, you know, just to make sure, because come on, a lot of days, just like everybody else, it's hard mentally to motivate yourself and to you know, to get the best out of yourself, especially the first 8 weeks was individual, you know. Mm-hmm. So I think we're adjusting more so now and constantly adjusting, adapting mentally, you know, but, you know, we keep it pushing. Our club and organization has done a tremendous job. You know, I've talked to a lot of players on the league and all the different levels, and, you know, it still amazes me how, again, how committed from top to bottom, from you guys, River City, to Rob, our ownership, and to the front office. Dude, it's been, I'm blessed to say that, because a lot of people get to have it like this. So that's why I think we continue to be committed, because we're lucky. We're very lucky. So,
I mean, yeah, it's definitely like very crazy circumstances, but it's good to hear that you guys are, even if you guys that are new to the team, still have the opportunity to work and learn and get to know from each other, you know? Because that's kind of like the thing that a lot of people have been having the biggest difficulty with is, you know, being able to physically, like, see someone except through, like, a camera phone. So, I get that. So, when you first started your playing career, you played for two U23 teams, Oklahoma City and San Jose, correct?
Yeah, and I also played for FC Tucson too. For that summer, right after like the MLS preseason.
Okay.
So right after I was drafted in 2014, after preseason, you know, didn't make the first team, and that's the first year that they wanted to implement a U23 team. And me being in that that draft class, I was, you know, kind of had you know, I was given the opportunity to kind of develop, most importantly. But also, you know, that what comes, a first team and a first anything are a lot of challenges as well. And I think from a organization standpoint, it was a huge risk in establishing. But from a coach's standpoint and the individuals and players, man, there was a lot of talent. You know, a lot of talent that was on that team is an MLS and then USL. So that was my experience that after being drafted and being able to be one of the first cats drafted on the U23 team. Unfortunately, that was a time where that was, I think, the second worst season in, you know, Earthquake history. And their eyes were not even, you know, one of the guys who I kept in touch with who came out to my games, shout out Dustin Cleaver, who saw me develop. And I think that truly inspired me to say, at least I know that I'm still growing myself. Despite the clubs, you know, they have to fire a lot of individuals. And I ended up seeing a lot of those people along my way. So it's like, despite not being able to get back to the first team, but to be able to develop and have freedom as a right back, I think that started, you know, the process for me. And then obviously, you know, Oklahoma U23 was just, man, that after coming back from Norway under those circumstances, that team was just, a driven team, and we won a lot, dude. And we won a lot. And if it wasn't for that opportunity, and I got to, you know, playing with those another great team of players from the Midwest, dude. You know, we went really far. And I think obviously our depth got the best of us. But that gave me an opportunity to go play in a match against Cruz Guadalajara. And then I was signed to their first team the next day, and I'm just blessed with some. Those little things, these U23 teams, like, kind of gave me the development, but gave me the opportunity to go on and to get contracts. And that same thing happened in Tucson, really. Like, every time I played a U23 team, I've had, it allowed me to gain my development as far as my confidence and my technical skill. Then I got an opportunity, you know, the next year, or whether that's overseas or here. So, man, I'm a kid, a product of the U23. I played them really like 3 or 4, actually. So that's just kind of been like how, you know, a lot of circumstances were, because this is before like the development teams and the establishments of USL, you know, were starting to get going. So I played a lot of games and have actually a lot of experience with a lot of U23 teams. So it's been great, and I'm thankful to be a part of those organizations, because that's how I got to Phoenix. That's how I ultimately, my relationship with Rayshon came from me playing and being a leader there. And going off, again, we won a lot of championships. We won a Western championship there, star-studded team, and because of the hard work, and you know, and when you do put in work, you never know where you might end up and where that coach who's coached at that time ended up. And I happened, Rich Charles happened to be an assistant. And then that allowed me to at least have a shot in preseason. And then Patrice, kind of, me and him built a very strong relationship. And Didier took me in as a little brother. And I didn't expect myself. I knew I was a hard worker, but I knew how the talent on that team. And next thing you know, I'm starting right back on that team for half the season, you know. So, you know, and I think, again, that goes to, I know it's a long, you know, answer, but it goes to just that the U23 system, you know, and I think it's hard work. So I definitely, it's something that I continue to be an ambassador for, but also to push young guys to, you know, not necessarily rush into trying to do what you need to do to get a professional contract. You know, go to a place, you know, where you're going to have a little bit of freedom. You're going to have time to grow on and off the field so that you can grow into yourself and into a position and into a relationship with your coaches that are best for you. You know what I'm saying? So I think that's why I feel the way that I do about the U23 system and how it affected me as a person and a player now. So, yeah.
I mean, you went into great depth about the question. Like, I didn't even get a chance to finish the question, but you kind of already knew where I was going with it, so that's great. Because I was going to ask, like, what are some of the similarities and differences between the U23 programs that you were at? But you said that you were drafted. How was your draft experience, you know, coming out of college and things like that? How was that?
You know, I have to say, because all the two sides. It's like when you're an ambitious, hungry athlete, and I come from a place where, like I said, I think, you know, too, when you think about when you when you come from a culture where three flies up and you catch some football, and all you want to do is win. You're competitive. But when you're used to a culture that's professional, you think about money and you think about success. And me being drafted, you know, I think it was that was when life and a perspective of what a professional really meant. Like, you know, being young and being drafted, you think that you're taken care of, you think that you've made it, but that's the beginning of the reality that there's so much more work that you need to do. And in my case, being drafted back to my hometown team, you know, you get the, you're going to almost get the illusion, you're going to be the illusion that just because you're going to be back home, you're going to be this face, and you're going to be this and that, and you expect that, but when you get to be around those other experienced players, and physically, mentally, it's like a whole nother world, especially when you talk about college, making it to a college to the professional realm, you know what I'm saying? So, and I think that was the biggest adjustment. I'm obviously a physical, people call me a physical specimen, but I think it doesn't matter where you are physically or mentally. It takes, you really have to be able to kind of go into one of these professional environments with just an open mind that you're not here to be who you are in college. Just like in high school, you go to college, you're not here to be who you are in high school. You're here to be a part of and grow and just allow that to happen. And I think me as a young this young kid, driven kid. Oh, I got drafted. I'm thinking that this, all these things are going to happen. But I didn't know, let alone the business side, but also just the physical, like I said, the physical and mental nature of professionalism. So really just to kind of wrap it up and really be more direct with your answer, the draft experience was nonetheless a dream come true. Because I think every kid, I worked my tail off just to see my name on that draft board. And I think for me, even still, Elliot, that in my heart, like, I've done what I've always wanted to do as a kid. But I think the other part of my journey where I am now goes back to me not knowing, me not being aware and educating myself of how much more work I need to do physically and mentally, you know, just to be a professional, be consistent with my routine. So I think that's why, like, my story, my journey now is to kind of make sure that we don't cut corners, make sure that I'm doing more work, not just physically, but mentally, and making sure I'm in the community, because that drives me as a player, because that's what football is ultimately about. And that's what I learned these last 5 years, at least. So I've got to, you know, that's what being drafted and thinking this is going to happen, thinking you're going to be this type of player, but it's really the opposite. You know what I'm saying? I think that's what kind of message being drafted meant, you know, for me. So, you know.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things that really attracted me to you as a player is not even your on-the-field stuff. I mean, granted, you're known for your pace and speed and everything like that. I'm not going to ask you about that because I need some tips. but it's really like the things I saw you were doing off the field, you know, all the work you was doing in the community and things like that back at your old club, Oakland Roots. So I wanted to ask, like, you know, can you tell us about some of your work in the community that you do now? And can you also explain what expressionism is to us? Because for those who don't follow you on Instagram, you know, it's one of the things that you talk about a lot.
I appreciate you even for giving me the opportunity to kind of talk about that. Obviously, you've been, you know, and really the fact that, and this is why what drives me, the fact that you're willing to do more research, meaning that you're willing to go farther into connecting. And I think connection, obviously, you can look at my childhood, was something that unconsciously, but now consciously, that I love. And I think that we need, ultimately, is that connection. So expressionism, you know, is art. When you look up the term expressionism, it ultimately, it really describes, you know, feelings and emotional content, which is art. So, and that's what I didn't find out until Didier Drogba, you know, Big Didi was really trying to, he said, hey, like, he almost said, hey, dude, life is, you're moving so fast that you're unable to see the beautiful part of the game. He said, I know you're a competitor, one of the, you know, he knows I was this kid who's hungry, but the game is so much more easy when we can start to break open and we can start to be connected to the game. And what allowed me, really a couple of years ago, even before Roots, really Roots was an opportunity for me to get more connected to the game by being more involved in my community. And coaching was something I started a while ago. And then I started doing it into my own mentorship type of business. And then I kind of was able, Roots was an opportunity for me to have a role as an ambassador, you know, to be in all these schools in the Brown community, but also in the Academy community, in the more, some would call it privileged areas, but I would say that because a lot of my life with my friends was in that Academy community. And Mustangs in San Jose at the time were in the majority of white communities. You know what I'm saying? So it allowed me to kind of be able to see different perspectives, and expressionism is what is at the core of soccer. And I'm a kid, clearly. We're expressing. If we're not able to express ourselves, it's going to be very hard to try to feel like you fit in. So Roots was, man, the projects that I was involved in, from being going to schools, from being able to put on different clinics for these kids who never really touched the ball, even for the Brown kids and Black kids, to say that, hey, soccer and sports is less about winning and more so about connection and relationships. Just like Diddy, I kind of learned from Phoenix. Like, man, every day was fun. Every day is a joke, but when we work hard. But it's like, don't forget, this thing is much bigger than just winning. And I think Roots for me, despite like us being again a first franchise, and yeah, we didn't win a lot, but we won a community.
Yeah.
And for me to be a part of that, I realized that yo, soccer became like this is only the beginning, and I wanted to continue to be involved with that. In Richmond, being back in my southern roots, like being a part of the community who's a pioneer. Did you know that this was one of the first clubs that actually tried out for years ago? And I didn't make it on those very fields that we trained and played. I forget those coaches at the time, the international guys. I didn't, that was one of the first clubs who rejected me. And this is, you know, and just going back and look forward to today, it's like the communities drive me because it's almost like I'm able to connect more to this game when I'm more connected to the community. So every time I'm able to, I told my coach, I said, hey, I want to be a part of this team, but if I'm allowed to do these things in the community, like I'm definitely in. I'm all in. And this is nothing but a community-driven club. So I think that's why I'm more encouraging today with kids, but also with my other teammates and other teammates, you know, who I connect with. Hey, the more you get yourself involved, trust me, you'll feel that you'll feel a part of the sport more. You know, and when you're out there on the field, you're going to feel they live vicariously through us. But if that isn't understood in two ways, then it's going to be hard to kind of fit in. So expressionism is a way for you to be emotionally and kind of more connected, whether that's art, and soccer is art. So it's a way to be connected. And I can't stop being connected at this point. So whatever drives me to feel connected, I'm going to go for it. You know, and a lot of, for me, that's off the field. You know what I'm saying? When I'm on the field, I feel like, you know, it's just a flow. You know, and I think when you finally find that, then that's what, and I think that's what you gravitate towards. So, yeah, and that's what I was just beginning to do, because I don't know if you guys, they haven't released a lot of the videos we started to do in the community. And for me, it's like I want to be able to go out more in the African-American community, because what I know about Richmond and the history that I'm getting to about Richmond, this is one of the, obviously, few settlements. I won't go too much into this, but this is one of the first settlements and where a lot of, you know, my ancestors, you know, came from, you know what I'm saying? And for me to utilize this sport as a vehicle to kind of connect to my people in these different communities allows me to kind of bridge that culture and to bridge and to have a voice and to express yourself, you know what I'm saying? And I think that's what I look for in this game in America, you know, and I want to be in America because I think it has a lot to offer to obviously my people, our people of color, but also to everybody who has a hard time connecting with people. So that's why, man, sorry for the really long the answer, but that's the depth for me about expression. That's why it's so important for me to kind of create this space in this game, but also in outside the field.
Man, I don't really want you to apologize for, you know, your answers and what a higher depth you're going about it, because this is what a lot of fans need to hear. You know, we always hear about, oh, he's great running, he can cross, he can do this, but we don't hear about the person. So to learn more about you as a person is amazing. And the fact that, you know, you're doing work not only in the soccer community, but also in the African American community. And you know, like, the same that I know, like, it's hard to get African-Americans to get interested in the game of soccer if they've never played it, if they've never been exposed to it properly, because, you know, growing up, we've always heard of, oh, well, it's super slow, or the old term of it's a white person sport, or, you know, they don't score enough, things like that. So it's like you have to, like, debunk a lot of those myths and show them, like, hey, look, like, it's a great, you know, it's a great tactical game. And I appreciate you so much for what you're doing in that, because, like, you know, like, last year, I did a whole Heritage Night with the Richmond Kickers, and, you know, doing that and everything was, like, opened my eyes up even more to, like, the lack of information that's out there for African-Americans going into the sport, and, like, the lack of opportunities for them to get into the sport, because one of the things that I realized, and I'm pretty sure you realized it as well, was how it's easier for our community to get into peewee football and AAU basketball, but it takes like, we're pretty much maxed out of getting into soccer properly. We could go to a certain age and, you know, still be comfortable with it, but at a certain point, it's like, all right, I'm going to throw my kid in high school football because I only got to pay $75 for him to play.
Right.
Versus, oh, I have to pay $75 just for cleats.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and the soccer programs and like, high, the high school level in urban schools, like, I'm a coach at Huguenot High School, where I went to school at, predominantly black high school. Most of the sports, most of the athletes there, even the parents, even the athletic directors look at it as soccer as, oh, this is training for basketball. This is training for football. They don't look at it as soccer as its own developing sport, like pushing to get scholarships. It's more of, well, we're just training them to get ready for football and basketball.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. when you go into that, man, it definitely speaks to me, and I'm pretty sure it speaks to a lot of people because a lot of people can relate to that.
100%. And I think for both, like, for not only us, but for everybody in this own culture, right? You know, when I say culture, like, everybody, in this, every being is a culture. But when you start to go inside the urban cities, let alone the other African-American communities in the world, communities, that's its own culture in itself. So it's like, when soccer, right, like globally, right, but you're talking about America, when it meets an African-American and then it meets the other cultures, dude, that's creating a whole new perspective. I was actually just talking about it with my friend, and I said, I think for me, and that's why it's like why this is so important to communicate and advocate and be an ambassador for this type of message, and because when you think about narratives and think about marketing, and what's marketed to our community, you know, we're people who are very driven towards entertainment, anything that involves rhythm. Obviously, you look at, football and anything that involves entertainment. The black culture is very much so naturally gifted, but we're also conditioned to really develop a life for our families outside of it. Obviously, I think when it comes to the sciences and a lot of departments, man, we've come a long way because I have a lot of sisters and brothers, dozens of friends who are now embarking because of our ancestors, like, you know, Martin Luther King and a lot of greats who come from even this region. You know, I forget her name, but she's one of the first women and females to be in the banking, which led to our Reserve Bank here, you know, originally. So it's like we've come a long way, but obviously, you know, that sports and entertainment has to offer what? It's a natural, it gets attention. So to utilize soccer from a global standpoint, but also to a point in my community to say, hey, like, this is something that is going to allow you to see the world. It's going to allow you to put yourself in situations. Like you said this earlier, it's a tactical game. And at Kobe, look at people like Kobe and Michael. And Kobe was, obviously, he grew up a little bit in Italy. Look at people like Steve Nash and that. It's a tactical game because it challenges the cognitive development of the brain. I think for people to understand that, and that's why I really push it, the culture, rhythm, fun, entertainment, creativity, and you look at brain engagement, you look at tactical pieces, soccer is really, for me, can empower and accelerate the African-American culture, but let alone the American soccer culture. You look at basketball, and you look at our American national team. If we get that same cultivation, obviously, when it comes to the physical nature, but the mental nature, but this tactical piece, and you think of what we're allowed to expose ourselves overseas, dude, this is, it, for me, I'm so driven because I'm like, wow, it's here. Like, the history is here. And now I get to be able to say, look, what narratives can I help create? The same narratives that, you know, music does for our people, but how can I mesh these things together? And I think that's what, along with being, like, an ambassador and being a community spokesman, and I feel like why I get so much joy, because this is an opportunity to create a narrative, to create, but also to create a new narrative for people who look like me. Because when kids look at me, they look at, I'm a team athlete, but now it's like I want people to look at, wow, like, soccer and sports is much bigger than just the aspect of playing. But that's what, and LeBron does very well now. He does very well, and I think he's one of the first, obviously, he's another evolution of MJ, he's taking his identity as an athlete and writing it in being somebody who's obviously a owner at so many different levels, because at the end of the day, it's about owning who we are. You know, until we can get to the point of we not identify so much in this one lane as a soccer player or as a person like this, I want to be identified and want people to know you need to identify with yourself and know that you're able to be who you literally can be who you want to be and not feel as though that you're just, you have this one lane. Because let's be very clear now, you know, let's be very clear and honest about anything about when you choose one thing and you stay with it, you're gonna be driven to do anything that has to do with the elements like of this one thing. But when we step outside those boundaries, life changes. And soccer did that for me. And that's why when we say tactical piece, I called my mom. I said, "Mom, you're a tactical genius." I was like, "Why did you just? You know, why did you choose it?" And to be honest, it goes to our parents. It goes to our environment. So the more parents get educated about obviously the avenues to school, but the avenues to go on embarkments overseas and adventures overseas, utilizing our sport, it helps, like I said, accelerate the perspective. Yeah. And that's all, I think that's what I get from soccer most, is it accelerates my perspective for my own people, but for the global unification. So it's just like, dude, I can be pissed about not being a kid who makes a lot of money, and that's what a lot of urban kids want, to make a lot of money, but I feel as though it's more important to make this sport relative, to make sure that a ball is in the household, to make sure that people are talking about what we're talking about the opportunity. And I think that's what is bigger than just winning, you know, because once we break that bridge, Elliot, then you're going to start to see, just like the NCAA, you're going to start to see more opportunity in GMs, coaches. Because for me, I really understand the process of in the front office and why it's important to have people who look like them in position so they can inspire and motivate people to say, okay, this is a safe place. You know what I'm saying? I was in Oakland, I was like, yo, this kid wearing high shorts, this kid playing soccer, just like you said, like, what you doing, man? Like, until that dissolves into like, yo, let's pass. Like, I was in Oakland when Martin Luther King spoke one day, and I was shooting some film for Roots. And this kid, I swear to you, this kid was dribbling his ball. We were shooting at the basketball court. I was like, I would never have thought I would see a kid in West Oakland who dribbled the soccer ball down the street. And he was dribbling the soccer ball down the street. I almost cried. He ended up being in my video. We're friends today, you know. That's how I know. And when I coach a group of boys, not because I'm biased towards the African-American race. No, I coach all people in all communities. But I have this group of boys in this family of, and they're all of brown descent and stuff, when mostly African-American. But when they were able to see me, that's bigger than just caring about sport. They're able to see themselves that they're bigger than just a game. And that's when you get the elevation of a mindset. That's what we need in our coaches, and that's what we need here and there. And it's like, this is what, for me, that's why I play. You know, that's what this other side of me comes out of. Like, you might see that ACC, you might see that aggressive player, but ultimately, because I want it so bad, don't get me wrong, you got to be a fierce competitor. But then you think about, like, what the opportunity has to present. So, like, you being, you know, an African-American man, be able to talk about soccer. That's something that not many people get to do. If you go to England, it's possible, but the American culture is definitely different. So I think what we're doing right now is going to speak volumes to where this is headed in, like, another 5 to 10 years. So I think it's a beautiful thing, man. It's really a beautiful thing. So it's only beginning. And I think soccer is going to help accelerate the American soccer culture. But it's also going to accelerate the African-American divide with how we see ourselves and how we see others towards us. You know what I'm saying? That's why I love when Kobe, he was an advocate of soccer. You know what I'm saying? Larry Fitzgerald is an advocate for soccer. Not because it is safer. Yeah, it is physically in some ways a lot less intense as far as contact, but only because it's like you said, it's a tactical. It goes down. It's a tactical game, and just like basketball. And yeah, I think that goes longer than just the physical traits of tactical players. You know, so it grows my mind literally. You know what I'm saying? And I think that's why I'm pushing it more than ever. You know what I'm saying? So, you know.
I mean, man, like, you're speaking a lot of things to my soul right now, and I'm pretty sure to a lot of listeners. It is great to hear. It's great to hear, and I thank you so much for being so open and honest about it.
Thank you, man. Thanks for giving me the time, and let me speak. I know it's probably...
I'm not going to cut anyone off that wants to go in-depth in answers, and also, like, I'm a history major, so, like, okay, my mind works like that, so I'm sitting here thinking, like, that sounds good. I'm like, Dad, oh, that's true. Like, so, one of the other things that I wanted to ask you, of course, and you brought it up, how was it playing in that Phoenix Club with the living legend himself, Didier Drogba? Like, how was that?
Yeah.
Day in, day out, you get to see how this guy, of course you get to see him on TV and things, but how was it getting able to work with him? And being part of, like, you know, I think when you joined, Phoenix just started as a club, right? So how was that process as well?
Right.
And seeing how they have kind of blew up to being, like, you know, this super huge USL club that a lot of people that, you know, outside of, like, when you think of teams outside of MLS, obviously one of the first ones you think of is Phoenix, then Louisville, and things like that. So how was that?
Again, just to be a part of the inaugural anything is only going to kind of turn around tenfold, like, years to come. So only time is going to tell, and you're seeing that with Phoenix when you have a guy as global the impact as Didier Drogba. It's funny, while I was watching the MJ Last Dance, and I sent a video of DM Didier because. Americans who are obviously already in the soccer community is going to realize who this man is on a global scale. However, when you are around a presence that breathes and everything that he does, it's almost, in a sense, he does everything with a lot of care. He does everything with love and passion because his intention got him to where he is. It's not because of the teams he was on, because when he shared those stories with me, you know, when he invites us over and he cooks for us, he does that because his intentions, you know, are to be impactful. His intentions are to be are deeper than just say, hey, I'm DDA, buy this investment. Like, that's so important. I never knew, like, I had my own, obviously, drive. But when you're around somebody, obviously, of that experience, when you see it through technology, let alone you know somebody, because Chelsea was already my favorite team. But when you sit with the person and you get to see their process, you get to hear their stories of before how they got there, it's almost like you need to experience it and see it to believe it. That's what I mean by it. We need to work hard, not just for us to get to pinnacles, but we need to work hard so we can, by luckily, get ourselves in situations like this. I'm blessed. I worked hard because the years I took off because I ran into, like, you know, a mental breakdown and having to reevaluate myself and build myself just so I can be lucky and blessed enough to be on a team like that. I wouldn't have got that if I quit, you know. Just to be around somebody of not just a great athlete. This dude is a great. He's you know, he defused civil wars in his country, Africa. You know what I'm saying? And but when you see that process, when he's there first, when he's there, you put your hand over it. He says, "Look, it's really about what you're thinking about. It's less about what you're doing physically." You know. He's able, when he says that, through words, you can feel it because his intentions behind those words comes from, like, pure love and authenticity. And I think that's what people ultimately, you know, we live in a world where things are so fabricated, because of the easy access to things, and that's become a nature. And it's not all bad. It's not all great. But it's important to know that mentors and being able to be in touch with that deeper level of connection is ultimately going to say, wow, this is what a process looks like. And I think just to go, you know, to wrap it up and again, directly answer your question, I got to see this man's process as a player, as a partial owner, and his relationship with the general manager and the coaching staff of how relationships really matter. Because it all, guess why? Guess what? Because, you know, we have Patrice Carreron, you know, a French, he's like one of my dads, you know, like he was like a Phil Jackson to me, but he left to Egypt to go coach. And I think that's what Didier was trying to tell us. Like, hey, this is about brotherhood, man. This is about love and the connection. And we all think that we can do this and that, this and that. But at the end of the day, this is about trust. And so he showed me, if you let go and let trust in, anything is possible. Look how far we got. And I'm telling you, we may have lost in the championships in Louisville because they're a tactical tactician team. And they deserve it. I'm going to tell you right now, they deserve to win that game. However, when you look at the dynamics of what Didier brought to that team, it goes deeper than just a physical tactic. It's like, whoa, this is what football is all a game about, trust from a manager, trust from a teammate, trust from a fan. That's what leads people, you know, from Sunderland Until I Die, you know, a great Netflix series about, it's really focused on the community. It's like, that helps me put in perspective, Elliot, of what I'm doing about the community. I'm like, whoa. Y'all, like, this is much deeper than just, like, going out there and kicking the ball.
Man, I just got finished watching Sunderland Until I Die, like, last night.
It's so good, right?
Oh, my God. Yo, I feel so bad for him, man.
Yeah, right? You're like, oh, right. I do feel bad for him, too. But I'm like, oh, my goodness. Poor community, because they put their lives of people. This is, you know, it's a whole other level.
Yo. Like, I couldn't imagine. You know, granted, Richmond has been through some bad seasons. But I could not imagine my team getting relegated twice. Then on top of that, you get to the League Cup final, lose that in dramatic fashion. Mm. Then you drop out of the automatic promotion spot. Then you lose the promotion playoff in dramatic fashion. In all of the span of 5 weeks.
In the 5 weeks, I'm like, oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. But you feel though, like how serious and how everybody literally from the front office to the has to be committed to one new change to acknowledgement, right?
Yeah.
Because ultimately, what lies under like failure is like a lack of acknowledging, like, you know, the honesty and being comfortable. It's like that's what lies under there until that new president, that new ownership guy came in. And these new people, we weren't able to see like that stuff. But then also the players, a certain level of, you know, commitment. We weren't able to see that. You know, we weren't able to see until change comes in. You know what I'm saying? And I think that's what, like, for me, with having an opportunity on the field, it's like everybody has to be open to change, to being a little bit more vulnerable. You know what I'm saying? So, which means trust. So it's like that's what Didier, I think, brought to that organization overall, man. And I think that's why you look at, obviously, it's to his stature alone. His status quo alone is already going to bring a lot of people. But look how he changed the dynamics of the organization. You know what I'm saying? So I think that speaks volumes to just, like, what is possible from a player standpoint, but from an organizational standpoint. And from, obviously, American soccer, man.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? And so that's that. I mean, I think it's crazy. So where you can get yourself, you know, just based off of, you know, trust and belief, you know what I'm saying? And that's why I think it starts in the community, man. So.
Yeah, I don't want to hold you up too much longer. Are you cool with, like, a couple of more questions? I know you got to get the train.
I love doing this, dude. So, right. As soon as Nathan told me that you wanted to do this, I said, man, say no more. This is what I live to do. If I can have any other thing, I almost took a job in Arizona after Phoenix when I went to, before Root came to Christian. Like, man, I think I really just want to dive into getting to the depth and connecting people to soccer and soccer to people. you know, but here I am.
So, I want to ask, like, how was it playing for your hometown club, and especially being Open Roots, which I would categorize as probably one of the first pro-black soccer clubs in United States history. How was that experience, and what are the differences in play between playing for teams such as Oakland Roots and then going to, you know, USL League One and playing for Richmond? Yeah. And what attracted you to Richmond? I know that's a lot, but I want to know.
So, first, to answer the first question, it's almost like you got a history major. Obviously, I can't compare it, but it's like, you know, the history of, you know, Richmond and Abraham walking the streets, you know, before or 5 days before he was assassinated. And but you look at the liberation, that was obviously the official beginning of liberation. Official beginning of liberation. You probably can clarify more than me, but I won't go into depth. But the feeling of the, I only can relate to that by a fraction because of how much, you know, my ancestors had to go through of what liberation feels. So I only make that connection because I felt to the smallest extent of what, like, liberation for my culture first felt like. Like, looking at the stand and looking at my family and friends I grew up with, people who was like, yo, what the hell is D playing soccer for? This dude is fast. Like, what are you doing? You know what I'm saying? Like, but then to see them out there, and they like, yo, that's D. You know, for me, it's like, looking at kids who I grew up, I coached for, and I also played for the first club in Oakland, and shout out Bay Oaks and East Bay United. Like, looking at kids look at me, like, damn, he coached me, like, 3 years ago, but also so it's like a liberating feeling of like, oh wow, this is one what I dreamed of as a kid, you know, give me all the teary-eyed stuff, but it's a liberating feeling, you know what I'm saying? And it was obviously there's things I wish that could go well, but I realized, you know, now that it was much bigger than just what I wanted. Like, just to be a first black anything, because one of my grandmothers, one of my family friends, not necessarily by blood, but one of the first female professional with the baseball players, black professional. So for me to be a part of something like that, but to be a first professional organization in Oakland with soccer, it's like, you know, if I have anything to hang my hat on, you know, it's I got to be thankful for this, because this is, now more kids, like I said, are dribbling down the street just from knowing that there is an opportunity there. So for me, man, to answer your first question, it's an indescribable feeling of liberation. And then, so why was I driven to Richmond like so fast, and why I made that transition? I think I described it in the article that I think they're going to put out. But I think the easiest way, because we touched on it a little bit, and I think the reason that stands out to me the most, just like Roots, because I served my purpose there. And again, when it's building and developing something first, there's going to become a lot of challenges. Mm-hmm. And I knew that I'm about to be 27. I'm at a place in my career where me being an advocate and ambassador for as an African American, but also for an avid soccer ambassador, and just that overall growth in my community was what I needed to be there for. However, I knew once I did that, I was going to have a decision, right? Because that comes with great sacrifices and compromise. However, I knew in my career that I still have so much left to go that I need to be able to be in a similar environment as far as community, as far as soccer culture, which is very much more well-known here. Like, you, the River City, like, it reminds me closest thing to like the support that a European club gets, and that's because look at it's one of the first soccer communities, you know what I'm saying, in America, one of them, you know what I'm saying, and it's a franchise that that doesn't have to do as much marketing. Marketing is great, but I think I'm a marketing guy, so I push. I'm like, yo, we gotta be, you know, there's so much more we can do. Like I'm like a kid in a candy store because the history that we have here, and not only to the 30% African American community in Richmond, which I've looked at, and I said this is a lot of the reason why I'm here, because I want to be allowed to, one, like I said, be a part of that bridge. But so that was a huge part for me. But also when it comes to Darren and his energy, when you look at his background, Mika's background, like, and you look at my teammates, of why, like, dude, I still believe in myself, and I believe that, like I said, there's still a good 5 years or more, or several years left that I have yet to tap into. Mm-hmm. And I need to kind of commit myself into an environment I'm familiar with, and which I am. It's like a second home. It's like a second roots for me. Mm-hmm. So I tell people, I'm so glad we're having this conversation, because I really didn't publicly get to kind of write all this out to people. And it was kind of like, yeah, even like in my last events at Roots, this was really a big, this was tough, man. I ain't going to lie to you. It was very emotional. Mm-hmm. But I want people to know that Virginia, this part of the world was my second home, too. You know, my dad and I went to school, and I grew up a lot on this side. And I'm drawn to these communities, but also it made sense, obviously, for my family and my girlfriend's family, who's from Virginia. But it made sense for where I wanted to head to for my professional soccer career and what Darren had to offer, but also with this community had to embrace me. So I'm like, you know, as tough as I wanted to be back, it's time to, again, when you talk about being complacent and being keeping them moving and challenging, I need to do this. Not just for me, but for what potentially could be. And, dude, I'm loving despite our circumstances, right? Just for me to get the time to walk down the James River, being able to connect with my coaches, being able to connect to you, I feel like I'm what I'm experiencing at Roots. Obviously, we're not able to experience this in a stadium, because I think that's what it ultimately, you know, ties to, and I can't do these projects in the community yet, you know, but it gives me an opportunity and to say, hey, this is very much so needed, and it makes so much sense to me, you know, and I think I hope people can understand that, you know what I'm saying, and because how much love I have in the West Coast, remember, I call myself a bi-coastal kid. Right, this is me giving that love. It's time for me to do this on the East Coast too, and to better myself as a player, because I think there's still so much, much more room to grow. So, and the places that I strive to be as a player too, you know. So,
Man, I thank you so much for coming on today's episode, man. It's been a great pleasure to talk to you. Yo, like, just hearing everything about your backstory, how you played, why you got involved with the game. Like, you are the true definition of more than an athlete, you know, LeBron's famous quote and everything like that, man. I gotta say, man, this is probably one of my favorite interviews I've done.
Man, I appreciate, man, that really uplifts my soul. It feeds me to hear you say that, because, like I said, man, it's all the kids and people out there, we wouldn't have this opportunity if it weren't for, you know, people before us, and the game itself being able to kind of be able to express ourselves, you know, on and off the field. So I think I thank you, and I thank the community, River City. I thank the supporters, just for embracing me and for making me feel loved like I did back home. And despite our circumstances, so I thank you, man, for you being a voice for all communities, you know, and especially, you know, the Black community. So we can start continue to connect, man. To connect.
Yeah.
So I'm thankful for you, man. Appreciate you for having me.
No problem, man. You have a great rest of the day, alright? Alright, man. Bye.
Bye-bye.
This episode of River City 93 is brought to you by Roughneck Scarves and Icarus FC. If you're looking to get a custom scarf or jersey made, those are your two spots to hit them at. Once again, that's Roughneck Scars and Acres FC. And as always, I'm your host, Elliot Barr. And keep us on the good side, guys. Check it out.